This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Good evening. This is Rock Cash, your host this week on the People Speak Radio. The People Speak invites audience participation. You can listen by phone calling 760-569-7676, then entering the access code 192919#, when prompted. Or if you have a computer or a smartphone, go to bbsradio.com, navigate to Station 2, and click on the listen icon. You can also participate during the show with your call-in questions for our guests toll-free, United States and Canada, 1-888-429-5471. Our guest this evening is Kevin Ryan. Kevin Ryan is a chemist and formerly a lab director at Underwriters Laboratory. Until he questioned the official story on 9/11, he was fired from his job, and he'll tell us why, since Kevin has continued his research on the 9/11 dilemma. He's written another book, also called Another 19 Investigated, Legitimate 9/11 Suspects, and that he'll tell us about. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Please fill us in on your book, Kevin, and what got you woken up? In other words, because it seems like a lot of people just refuse to do so.
Well, that's a long story. I've been learning about 9/11 since 2003, so about for 10 years now, I've been investigating 9/11. And what woke me up was realizing that the invasion of Iraq in 2003, in early 2003, was based entirely on lies. And I was noticing that as it was happening. I think a lot of people were. If you were in tune with international press, for example, you knew that things like the aluminum tube and the Niger documents, those things were false, and that the Bush administration continued to use them. So that's kind of what got me to understand that the people in power at the time were lying to do some really terrible things. And I wondered when that lying began. That got me involved in 9/11 investigation. As I said, it's been 10 years. I've done a lot of different things. You mentioned that I was a manager at the time for Underwriters Laboratories. I led a division of Underwriters Laboratories. And when I started investigating 9/11, I started wondering about something that the CEO of the company had told me about. UL having tested the fire resistance for the steel in the World Trade Center buildings. And so I started asking questions about that for about a year at UL. And the UL management could not explain how these buildings, one of them fell in less than an hour, despite the fact that the testing showed that the steel should have withstood much higher temperatures for longer periods of time. So I learned that the management at UL just couldn't explain it, and as I saw the government reports coming out from a body called NIST, I saw that those reports were really, they were false. They were not truthful in terms of the testing that was being done by NIST and by UL, and so that really got me more involved. I ended up writing a letter to the government agency, NIST, and got fired for that in 2004, and it's been a long road since then. I became the co-editor of the Journal of 9/11 Studies, and I've been doing that for many years. I've written a lot of articles on various subjects, contributed to books, and as you said, I finally wrote an entire book myself. It's called Another 19, Investigating 9/11, a Legitimate 9/11 Suspect.
Right. Yeah, and that's what we're questioning tonight. your other 19 suspects are, I'm sure, completely different than the ones that the government's official story put out there, and it's all seemed like malarkey. Of course, a lot of people were calling in from Saudi Arabia saying, "Hey, this is me. I'm here in Saudi Arabia. I wasn't on the plane. What are you talking about?"
Right, right. That's exactly right. Those things were happening, and those stories were being reported in major mainstream news sources like the London Telegraph and BBC, and those stories were just ignored by the official investigation, which was alarming. You know, maybe there were cases of mistaken identity, but that's not known. What we know is that the FBI and the 9/11 Commission just failed to investigate those stories, and so that leads people to be even more suspecting of the official investigations. And there's so many reasons to go after the official investigation of the 9/11 Commission. You know, I've met with the vice chairman of the 9/11 Commission myself, and he just. He really doesn't know much about 9/11. I hate to say it. He really he's apologetic for his report. He and his co-chairman Thomas Kane said they were set up to fail. But really, if you look into it, there's a lot more to it than that. They rolled over. They covered up the attacks of 9/11.
Yes, they did. I mean, you know, to me, it was more of a common sense thing. It just didn't make sense, whether it was the buildings collapsing down on itself or anything of that nature. And I'm not an engineer. I'm just a regular guy out there on the streets. And it just didn't make sense. The domino effect, I do work in construction, so I was able to figure out that it takes time for the beams to give in and the infrastructure to give in, and the building just couldn't have come down that fast. Plus, I'm former military, and that looked like it was all demolition to me. But what's your view on that?
Yeah, I think that obviously at this point maybe years ago, you needed to have more of a science background to really refute the official account, but you don't need to have that anymore. And most people who just witnessed the video of the third building, World Trade Center Building 7, they can tell right away that that was a demolition. But even if they didn't see that for themselves, the NIST agency essentially admitted that World Trade Center Building 7 was in free fall. They've said that this building was in free fall for a period of time. That fact was kind of pulled out of them by a physics teacher in California named David Chandler, who just made really plain and simple to understand graphs about the fall of the building and how it was exactly like free fall. And so NIST ended up having to admit that this building, which was 47 stories tall and was not hit by a plane, was in free fall for a period of time, meaning for over a span of at least 8 floors, the building met no resistance as it fell, meaning hundreds of connections, super strong bolts and welded connections just all failed simultaneously, as if they were taken apart through the use of explosives. So it really doesn't take a scientific background to understand this anymore. The questions that we need to answer now are, well, who could have placed explosives in these buildings? And that's one of the things that I address in my book. And I go through, as you said, 19 alternate suspects. So the idea is we've been given this story of these young Arabs, these 19 young Arabs who clearly some of them couldn't even fly a small aircraft. They would have had to been more than just incredibly lucky to have pulled off the attacks, frankly, because the physical requirements of what happened to the buildings, it just couldn't have happened the way we were told. So I went through and I looked at 19 other people who were in position to actually accomplish what the official accounts have never explained. You know, the things like how the buildings could have fallen through the path of what should have been most resistance, how the air defenses could have all essentially been disabled for 2 hours, more than 2 hours, how the chain of command could have just been AWOL that morning. Those are the kinds of things that I looked at. There are a lot of other details, for example, insider trading is something that people are sometimes interested in because that's so easily provable now. There have been statistical studies around the world. Teams have shown that 9/11 insider trading did occur.
And it was also on the news the same day where there was big institutional sell-offs. And they said it on the mainstream media.
Yeah.
I'm pretty much I've got a pretty much a photographic memory or a memory like an elephant. And there's other things that a lot of people missed. Like there was a report in June of 2001 that stated that two Global Hawk drones were missing from the Air Force arsenal. And then it just showed up one day, and that's it. It was gone.
Yeah, a lot of these, the stories that showed up briefly, like you said, they just weren't followed up on. There's a really good resource online called the History Commons 9/11 Complete 9/11 Timeline, and it's got this long history of these unique stories like the one you just mentioned, which just cropped up and then they disappeared, and they weren't ever put together in a cohesive whole. But the kind of things that I did is I took like the insider trading issue, and I wrote an article on that a couple of years ago that ended up being a chapter in one of Jesse Ventura's books. He wrote a book called 63 Documents the Government Doesn't Want You to Read. And he asked me to have my insider trading article be one of the chapters there. And so I agreed to that. And then I followed up on a couple of the suspects in my new book are related to that, one being the former FBI director, Louis Free, another being George Tenet, who was CIA director. Both of those gentlemen joined a company right after they left their official positions, a company that was suspected of 9/11 insider trading, and it's listed in an FBI summary document of what should have been an investigation, but really wasn't. Another guy is a man named Wirt Walker, who was chief executive officer for a security company called Stratesec that a lot of people have talked about. Had contracts for the World Trade Center, security for the World Trade Center, for Dulles Airport, where one of the planes took off, or under United Airlines, which owned two of the other planes, and a number of other facilities that are of interest. So Wirt Walker is one of the other suspects in the book, and I go into great detail about not just the 9/11 insider trading, but a lot of his background.
Walker being a relative of George Bush?
He is a distant relative. It turns out that connection is not the most important thing with regard to him, because he is actually, he's like a covert operative, essentially. He's got this history of his family history goes back to, you ever heard of Russell and Company? It's this old kind of deep state operation that bought up a lot of the infrastructure in the United States using profits from the...
Hello? I think we got disconnected, Bob. This is Rock Cash with the People Speak Radio. My guest this evening is Kevin Ryan, author of 19... Hello? Oh, I guess we lost Kevin Ryan. Okay, anyways, we'll have Kevin back with us. Basically, he was describing to us his situation at his work for questioning. This is how you get rewarded by the corporations for questioning things that are evolving around in our country, or if we question anything that our government does, this is the way that we're treated. We're inevitably fired or anything of that nature. I will have a few questions that can be taken in at any minute until we get Mr. Ryan back on the phone. For everybody that's out there that doesn't know about the Solomon Building, the Solomon Building was also reported by the BBC as to have fallen a half hour before it actually fell. And there was no planes that hit the building. There was barely any structural damage. There was a fire. So what was the reason for it falling? You know, that is a big question for all of us. That is should be the biggest question for everybody that's listening in and tuning into our show. We need to question. This is a major fact. And not only that, it's your duty as a citizen of the United States to question everything that might concern us.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, this Welcome. Is Kevin.
Hi, Kevin. Welcome back. We lost you there.
Yeah. I don't know what happened, but somehow I got cut off. So,
okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, we were talking about Wirt Walker, and there's another character from Statisec that was the chief operating officer, Barry McDaniel. He's another one of these suspects. And there's quite a few other people related to the various things. As I said, the air defense failures. You know, the book goes into NORAD and the FAA failures and Rudy Giuliani and things that happened in New York.
Yeah, well, Rudy Giuliani is known. You know, he went after the mob, but he's a mobster himself.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what's clear. And you know, you can't just blame him because a lot of his family were clearly related to the mob, but he hired mafia characters to clean up Ground Zero, and there is a lot more to him than meets the eye. This guy is, you know, he was a big shot in the Department of Justice going back to the 70s, going back to the Ford administration, just kind of a wonder boy, you know, just promoted at times when really terrible things were happening in, like, Central America, and the Justice Department was turning a blind eye to not only that, but also to the development of a known terrorist network that goes by the name of BCCI, the Bank of Credit and Commerce International. And he was also someone who investigated BCCI, and then after he left his U.S. attorney position, he went and joined a law firm that represented that terrorist network. A lot of people don't know these things, but you know, Giuliani, there's just a long string of reasons to investigate this guy. You know, for his foreknowledge about the buildings, he knew beforehand, before the towers collapsed, that they would. He even stated it on an ABC News interview.
Well, the investigation should go from the beginning. And why was the World Trade Center taken away from port authorities and given to a private entity?
Yeah, that's a good point. You mean the Silverstein properties?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's a very suspicious trade that happened, deal that happened in 2001. And you know, there's a lot of speculation about Larry Silverstein's insurance payoff. He got a huge insurance payoff, a double indemnity sort of insurance payoff.
As if they,
separate events, yeah. So he just made a fortune off it, apparently. There's also more to Silverstein, although I don't know how involved he was. I can say that he and the U.S. Secret Service had called for a meeting in Building 7 that morning and called brought together a bunch of military explosive disposal units. This is just straightforward out of mainstream media sources. These people were showing up at Building 7 to have a terrorism-related meeting that was called by Silverstein and the Secret Service, and they just happened to be explosive disposal people. And they, of course, went right to work after that. So a lot of very suspicious things were happening that morning. And the book that I wrote goes into that. There's also a lot, like a lot of other online sources, people can find out about these things. You know, I recommend, as I said, the History Commons 9/11 timeline. I recommend Journal of 9/11 Studies, where I'm a co-editor. 9/11research.com has a lot of good information. So people can find free information on the web that's of a lot of value.
Yes, there is a lot of information on the web. This is Rock Cash on the People Speak with our guest, Kevin Ryan, author of Another 19. Kevin, I have some audience questions for you. I have a Tom in Michigan, and okay. His question is, given that a person believes the kerosene could not melt or even bend the beams of the building, what do you believe caused the free fall and why?
Well, there's overwhelming evidence that there were explosives at the World Trade Center, you know, and that includes, you know, these ejections of material, the ejections of huge segments of steel at high speed over 100 yards away, but the ejections of these point-like bursts, which are called squibs, sometimes called squibs, you know, the near free fall speed is an indication that explosives were used to remove the resistance of the lower structure. But also there is strong evidence in the World Trade Center dust for the residues of what's called thermite. These are tiny iron spheres that would have been formed as molten iron is being sprayed through the air, as if thermite was being used to cut through these beams or to, in addition to other types of explosives, used to weaken the structure. So in addition to that, there's a lot of eyewitness testimony to the sounds and sites of explosions. There's a good paper at the Journal of 9/11 Studies called 118 Witnesses. It's written by Professor Graham McQueen, who's my co-editor now. And this just lists from the fire department oral testimonies that at least a third of the people who were being interviewed talked about seeing and hearing explosions going off at the World Trade Center. So, you know, that's a lot of evidence. Eyewitness testimony in any court of law is evidence. Photographic testimony photographic evidence is also evident with regard to explosions. So I think explosives were used. I think thermite was used, and hopefully that answers the question.
Well, good luck trying to question that or bringing it up in front of Congress without interruption from people that are involved in it. I have another question for you from Nancy in Ohio. She says, Kevin, do you think Israel was connected to what happened?
I really don't know if Israel, well, you know, what we should say is if elements of the government of Israel were involved. That's what we should ask. I certainly don't think it was a government plan, an Israeli government plan, but there may have been elements of the Israeli government involved, just like there may have been elements of the United States government involved, or even the Canadian government. The British government may have been involved, elements of it. But it's all possible. What I think is important, as I do in my book, it's important to start from what happened that shouldn't have happened, and what didn't happen that should have happened, and then who was in position to make those things so. And then we'll just follow the evidence wherever it leads. I think that's what we have to agree.
Yes, yes, indeed. Got a question from Mike in California, and he wants to know about what your present job is and Do your employees care that you're a 9/11 truther and researcher?
I am a laboratory manager, still chemistry laboratory manager. I work in a different industry now, but here in Bloomington, Indiana, where I live, I'm pretty well known for still being very spoken out about 9/11. So I'm going to be on television periodically, on the radio here locally. I'll give presentations locally as well as around the country. And so people know who I am. They know everything about my history with 9/11 and that I'm not that I'm very serious about it. And there's different reactions. There's some people who are very negative about it, and there are other people who are just real curious, and there are other people who are just very supportive. And so usually I found that the people who are very supportive of me are people who are obviously a little more thoughtful, sometimes a little more technical, and worried more than others about, you know, how things are going in society. So I get a mix of a lot of different reactions.
All right. Got Cheyenne in New York and John Gross from Pennsylvania pretty much asking the same question. Cheyenne would like you to comment on the Kumasadu dresser and the painting for painting. Okay, that's a new word for me. For concrete pulverization and cutter charges.
Yeah, so one of the suspects in the book and in articles that I've written in the past is a man named L. Paul Bremer, and he's most well-known for being the Iraq occupation governor after the invasion. But he actually was two things. He was the most prominent terrorism expert in the United States for 15 years before 9/11. He was the leader of the National Commission on Terrorism, and he was Reagan's ambassador at large for counterterrorism and so forth. But what people don't know is he just happened to be in the South Tower at the time. He wasn't in there that day. He survived, but his office was just above the impact zone. And he was on television that day talking about, you know, all the years that he spent warning us about terrorism. Now he knows all the answers, and his office just happened to be there. But he also was a director for Komatsu Dresser Industries. It was an association between a company called Japanese company called Komatsu and Dresser Industries, which is an old oil services company that George H.W. Bush and others were associated with. Komatsu Dresser patented a thermite demolition device. That's what the question is about. Mm-hmm. So Bremer was a director for this company that patented a thermite demolition device, and he just happened to be in the World Trade Center. He just happened to be the nation's leading expert on terrorism. He just happened to tell us all who it was, Osama bin Laden, on 9/11. There's just a lot of very weird coincidences with regard to Bremer. And he is one of my suspects. I go into some detail on him.
You know, another suspect thing that came up to me was the rate of turn that the second plate made, because it looked like it was about to miss that building. And in order to make that plane respond like that, I mean, you have to be a balls-out fighter pilot, or it was remotely flown.
Yeah.
It did not. There's no way that it could have cut that radius. And I'm not even a pilot, but I do understand a little bit of the aviations.
In one of my chapters, I go into detail. I actually approach this from the Pentagon, because you're right about Flight 175 and that really sharp turn. And not only that, but, you know, what it would take for a pilot to actually hit those buildings going at 500 miles per hour, supposedly, as they were. And, you know, that's even more emphasized with the Pentagon, because Flight 77 was reported to have hit the Pentagon only a few feet off the ground. I mean, it came in, you know, 6 feet off the ground, supposedly at 500 miles per hour. And that's another example of how, you know, this guy Hani Hanjour, who's supposedly giving credit for having done this amazing feat of aeronautics. After having, by the way, after having made a descending 3,000 foot descending 330 degree corkscrew turn and then leveled out 6 feet off the ground and hit this building at 500 miles per hour, all of that indicates, as you said, it does indicate remote technology, remote flight of these planes.
Yes.
And you're exactly right. I go into some of the technical details on how that actually was possible on 9/11.
Good. Okay, this is Rock Cash on A People Speak. We'll be right back with our guest, Kevin Ryan, on The People Speak, the author of Another 19. We'll be right back after this short break.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson for Normal. And like millions of other responsible Americans, I smoke pot. There's nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana. And it's none of the government's business. Let's get the government out of our private lives once and for all and stop arresting smokers. Let's take a stand for personal freedom. And learn how you can help. Go to normal.org.
Got questions? The library's got answers. And books and magazines and CDs and videos and web access and databases and all sorts of other resources at your library. In a world that's information rich, libraries are information smart. Find the right answer and a whole lot more at your library.
Come, you masters of war.
Hello, this is Cindy Sheehan. America's war on terror has become a war of terror, with endless drone bombings, continuing military occupation, as well as detention, rendition, and torture still being practiced under the current administration. I lost my precious son Casey to war, and now work towards a day when not one more mother, son, or daughter will suffer such a loss. Listen to my podcast, read my blog, and come join me at any activities I attend near you. Please visit CindySheehanSoapbox.com for more information, and let's work for peace together.
This land is yours.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak, every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern, on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
Welcome back. This is Rock Cash, your host on The People Speak Radio with our guest, Kevin Ryan. We will take calls. So for our listeners out there, you can call in at 888-429-5471 in the United States and Canada. Kevin, I'd like to pretty much touch base with you on the gold that was underneath. You know, people hear the reports, but they never keep it in mind or listen to it.
Yeah, there actually were some conflicting reports, but all of them agreed that under World Trade Center Building 4, which was in the same complex as the towers, there were vaults that were used to store gold and silver. And, you know, Rudy Giuliani was criticized heavily by the firefighter union and victims' families for having paid attention, so much more attention, they it seemed, to removing that gold and silver rather than continuing the recovery of remains and victims. But the other part of that is that, you know, Giuliani reported that, you know, there was more than $230 million worth of gold, for example. But other reports said that there was actually closer to $1 billion worth of precious metals in those vaults. And so there is a mystery still as to whether, you know, some of that was taken in some sort of theft after the event, and you know,
there was a brief report about trucks and security vehicles along with it on the bottom.
Yeah, and I've heard those too, and so I don't know if we can say for sure how much was there, how much might have been stolen, but it's definitely one of the mysteries that needs to be determined. It could have been potentially one of the motives for some of the people being involved in this. You just never know. I do go into some motives in the book, though, that are more. More having to do with how, you know, this was a pretext for invading countries that were rich in resources. I think that's obvious. We can all admit, you know, the countries that have been invaded, Afghanistan as well as Iraq, have billions of dollars worth of resources that are being exploited now by international firms that couldn't get into those areas before 9/11. You know, it just seems that all indications are that 9/11 was a planned pretext for invasion of foreign countries. Not only that, but I believe also for more control of the citizenry in the United States and throughout the world, more control over, you know, more consolidation of power in the presidency and in other such offices in other countries. So it's a power play. It really was a power play. It's ongoing. But the gold, I think, is possible that was part of the motivation as well, and there definitely are some mysteries that haven't been solved with regard to that.
Not only that, the resources in other countries, it seems like our government is pursuing that full force and very heavily handed, I might say, as far as Libya and now Syria, and who knows. I'm assuming that Iran is the big picture, since our military now surrounds Iran and every single country around it. Louise in Florida, I have another question from one of our viewers. She wants you to comment some more about the insider trading, and has there been any follow-ups and prosecution of those who profited from 9/11? But of course, I can give you that answer, no, but she wants your comment on it.
Okay, yeah, the insider trading offers several direct avenues for prosecution today. That's the power of the insider trading issue, because, for example, the FBI summary documents, in which they stated their very weak and essentially non-existent investigation into these SEC, you know, the Securities and Exchange Commission, asked the FBI to investigate certain specific companies and trades with regard to 9/11 insider trading. That was just part of the extensive insider trading issue. But these four companies, for example, one of them I mentioned was the Visage company. It was a facial recognition technology. It's kind of a homeland security technology that both Louis Free and George Tenet joined the board of after they left. You would think that would be a pretty straightforward thing. The SEC flags the company for 9/11 insider trading. The FBI and the 9/11 Commission failed to investigate the company. And then the director of the FBI and the director of the CIA joined the board of the company. That seems like pretty good prima facie evidence for an investigation, perhaps by an independent international body. The other person I mentioned was Wirt Walker, and his stock trading with Stratesec was also flagged by the SEC, and he can be investigated immediately because the excuse that the 9/11 Commission and the FBI gave was that he had no connections to Al-Qaeda. They didn't even interview these people. They didn't look into it at all. They just on their own said, well, we cannot think of any connections to Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda for these people. So although it looks very much like insider trading, it couldn't have been because they're not connected to al-Qaeda.
Not to mention a lot of the securities investigations on Enron also was was in the Solomon building.
That's right. So, Building 7 housed all those documents for the Enron investigation and also the WorldCom investigation, and they were all lost, weakening and you know, kind of letting those cases fall apart. Very convenient for the people involved.
Kind of like the Lincoln Savings thing all over again, but this time he was in it himself to protect himself.
Yeah.
Speaking of George Bush. That's a little bit on the crazy side. Here's another question that I wanted to ask you, and a lot of people forget this, but why were all the scraps of 9/11 sold to Japan? It was put on a tugboat, it was shipped off to Japan, and, I mean, we have metal recycling companies here in the United States. Why it wasn't this stuff left here, investigated, crushed? But no, it was directly put on tugboats and shipped to Japan.
Yes, exactly. The steel evidence from the World Trade Center was whisked away just immediately. It was just, it was not only whisked away, not only on barges, which is true, but also on trucks, which had high security GPS devices and engine monitors inserted. That people really wanted to know where these trucks and barges were going. They had to keep a close eye on them, and they had to move it out quickly. But what's even more surprising is that all this steel was sold at a bargain price. They lost millions of dollars in the sale, just in the scrap steel sale. So they had to get rid of it really quickly, which I'm sure cost quite a bit of money, and then they sold it at a bargain price. And it was really evident that there was some reason why that steel needed to be removed quickly and gotten rid of. Now you mentioned Japan, but I know that a lot of it was sold to China. It was shipped over to China and melted down right away. And the reason why that's interesting is that explosives are the alternative explanation, and evidence for explosives would have been clear in the steel debris. Something called peddling, for example, where metal flanges are splayed outward. You know, those kinds of things would have been really clear, but unfortunately, most of that important steel was removed before the investigators ever got to the site.
You know, I had a former friend of mine, tried to make up or bring up the thing saying, well, concrete pops from the amount of heat or from as a derivative of a sound effect, and concrete will start popping from the heat or the initial shock or things of that nature. Do you believe he's correct in his analogy?
Well, it's kind of irrelevant in this case because these three buildings were steel frame structures. They weren't concrete frame structures. They did have concrete in the floor pans, but the floor pans weren't holding the building up. It was the steel columns and beams that were holding up the building. And so it's what happened to them. So there's basically steel, high-strength steel, that was covered with fireproofing and that was tested by my former company, UL, to withstand hours of intense heat in furnaces, you know, higher temperatures for longer periods of time than what existed in the World Trade Center buildings. So, it's true that concrete will spall, but that's not relevant in this discussion because it wasn't concrete that was holding the buildings up.
Okay, and I have a question from a Janice in Arizona. And she wants to know if you think that the government discourages the 9/11 conspiracies because it would undermine their reason for the war on terror.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. That's in fact proven in that President Obama had an advisor write a paper a few years ago. The advisor's name was Cass Sunstein, And he was an advisor to Obama, and he wrote at the time an article calling for the cognitive infiltration of conspiracy theorist groups, meaning 9/11 truth groups. Cognitive infiltration means basically, sending covert operators into associations of truth seekers to disrupt and essentially foil the efforts to get to the truth. So this isn't really, it's not a question. The government definitely is interested in shutting down any questioning of 9/11, not just 9/11 anymore, but obviously a lot of things. We've got this big scandal where the NSA is spying on all of us, whistleblower just came out and did some good work telling us about it.
And Dick Cheney had the audacity to call him a traitor to the people.
Yeah, but did you hear his response, which was just priceless? It was, he said it's the highest honor for an American to have Dick Cheney call him a traitor. Did you see that?
No, I didn't, but that's good. That's an awesome response. Absolutely. Here's a theme for you. If you go to West Hempstead, Long Island, they brought back a piece of that steel from Japan, and it's held there at the West Hempstead Fire Department, West Hempstead, Long Island. That's my hometown, and I read an article that was in their local paper there that they had brought back this piece and had a big ceremony and things of that nature. So that is there for further investigation if needed be. We're running short on time, Kev, so one last question. The Oklahoma bombing, what do you think on that?
Well, that's a good question, because if people haven't seen a film called A Noble Lie, they'll have plenty to talk about with regard to the Oklahoma City bombing. The 1995 bombing was the same sort of operation, as appears the FBI was implicated in it. And, I go into some of these, there are many connections between the Oklahoma City bombing and the events of 9/11, believe it or not. Wirt Walker, who I mentioned as one of the suspects, had his offices outside of Oklahoma City. And those offices are now occupied by the man who was Zacharias Moussaoui's flight instructor. And, the alleged 9/11 hijackers were all over Oklahoma City in the few years before 9/11, going to flight schools there, the same airport as Wirt Walker, the airport of David Boren, who's pretty well known as a former senator from Oklahoma. So there's a lot to learn and a lot of good connections to follow up on there.
Okay, I got one last question. I'm sorry, but I'm trying to not cut short the time. I have John from the Canadian Rockies that asked, how are we to believe that the top portion of the WTC would continue to the basement without disintegrating and therefore stop the collapse partway down?
Yeah, he's got a great point. That's the essential idea behind the final official account, after several of them, was this pile driver theory, where the small chunk of the building at the top fell a little ways and it continued to fall, crushing the rest of the cold steel, 90 stories of cold steel beneath it. But John's point is good, is that the fact is, if you look at the videos, the top portion not only was not big enough and heavy enough to do that, but it disintegrated into dust. So there was really nothing driving that pile. The building was just disintegrating in terms of the tower. So it's an excellent
Absolutely.
Point.
Thank you so much. I would like to thank Kevin Ryan, our author of Another 19, Investigating Legitimate 9/11 Suspects, which you can purchase on Amazon and learn more about Another at 19.com. That's another one, 19.com. I'm sorry, another 19.com. Thanks
great.
To our listeners and engineers, Don Newsom at BBS Radio, Next Tuesday, our guest is Professor Stephen Jones and the engineer who suggested it. Good night, folks.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the steeple by the relief office, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream water. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.